What shall we look at this evening?
Yes.
I'm still here, but my head ego is very much trying to pull me out, and
it's already gone. Your path,
like,
in the car at the airport. Landed.
Yeah. Yeah, and so keep coming back, and I just like, yeah, is there something? And it's hard not to see that conversation as a problem.
Yes, which is the second layer of being pulled into it, right?
Yeah.
So, have you ever noticed this before?
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't mean just here.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Into the future.
Yeah.
Into the past. Anywhere but here. And sometimes, of course, it's just more compelling than other times, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you really are going. You've been gone a really long time.
Yeah.
And the job is the same, right?
I saw that this morning of, like, you know, another day of awareness practice. It's as if what I do here is awareness practice.
It's
going
to be over soon.
And, yeah, and then it's over.
We're going to put this behind us.
Like, ego is all ready to put it, yeah, like,
yeah.
counting the hours, counting the days, like.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw it, and I recorded about it. I was like, what I do here is the same as what I do at home. It's, I show up for what I've committed to do and communicate if I'm not going to be able to do that. And stay here.
And stay here.
Yeah.
So it's really helpful, isn't it, to get this big dose of it before you get out there.
Yeah.
Because, of course, once you get out there, there's going to be nothing to remind you to come back here, right? I mean, truly, you're going to be on your own.
Well, except for Project Joy and theme,
yes,
class.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Well, I just meant on getting home.
Oh, well, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Yes, once you get there, then you can establish your kind of your support systems, right? Yeah. It's good to see how desperate it is. How desperate it is to get away. Get out from under scrutiny.
Well, like, just sitting, like, there's a whole physical reaction in the body and everything. Like, it's pretty wild.
Yes. So, in Zen, you know, we say body and mind are one. Mm-hmm. But almost nobody actually gets that. It runs through a, I can see what I think really affects my body. No, they're one. They are the same thing. So when that starts up, you feel it, right? You feel the energy of that.
Yeah. I'm not sure I've noticed it this acutely before.
No, I would bet not. No. This is a wonderful, put yourself on the slide, slip under the...
Yeah. A couple weeks ago, it was suggested that I be with all of my body all the time. And I discovered that ego has no idea how to do that.
None.
And
no interest in doing that.
And it feels like I'm just playing with it. Like, kind of like, okay, what does
well,
it
see,
feel like?
See, there it is, right? So what does it feel like? Where's that happening? What does it feel like? Said the head about the body.
Yeah.
That's not the same as being with the body. Because one of the big differences is that the body does not speak in full senses. You with me on that?
I think so.
It's fascinating to watch. So there's awareness on the body. There's awareness on the body. There's not a lot to say about it. Right? So we want to race up here and go, okay, so I'm feeling this, I'm feeling that, and so where are those sensations? Oh, there's one. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So the difference in really being with the body is to have, I think, a greater possibility of intelligence that animates dropping in stuff. Yeah, little insights. Now again, the tendency is, oh, I see, okay. Well then, and we're off and running again, right? So that's why, they do this little thing. So you're sitting, and attention is on the breath. They're just breathing in and breathing out. And as you do that, you realize that the body calms down. And as the body calms down, you realize that thinking slows down. There's more space between activity in the head. Okay? And as there's more space between the activity in the head, the emotional stuff settles. Which is the argument for staying with the body and with the breath. Because when we're up here, okay, and then the body gets going, and then there are all the labels that go with that, and then there's the emotional stuff that goes with that.
Yeah.
Life is more difficult.
So recording and listening about the stuff that comes up, but not pulling that. Because I've noticed when I'm recording and listening that that's a story. And it's looking at experience. So that's pulling me out of the moment?
Well, it's an interesting process to watch, isn't it? Because you're talking about what's going on with you. Listening to that later can be illuminating. Right, because you listen to a week's worth of recordings. You just listen to them. And you'll see a whole lot about how you operate that you don't notice when you're going along, even when you're making the recordings.
Yeah, I've had that experience.
Yeah. So then there you are recording, and you become aware of what you're recording and how you feel as you're recording it. And you realize you're hearing art in that.
Yeah.
and that's going on, and that's why. So all of this, you know, one of my favorite things in an email class is we're practicing awareness. What we're practicing here is awareness. This is awareness practice. Okay? Because no matter what, it's just that immediate up into, okay, I'm ready. Yeah. All right, I saw that. Okay, what do I do? What does that mean? What do I do now? We're practicing awareness.
Well, I wanted to talk about not indulging. It's all about me.
So you want to give a little background on that?
I do.
We had a little conversation, not just me and thee, but
yes,
a larger group of us.
And can I tell a little recording and listening success story before?
Please.
So I was just back in Denver for a while and visiting some friends. And a friend I've known for a really long time, the last time I saw him, he's read some of your books. He really likes Suffering is Optional. And there's this Buddhist center fairly close to his house. We saw an introductory to meditation, and he wanted to go, but he just kept running into resistance. Mm-hmm. So when we were talking about it a little bit, it seemed like he just needed permission to go and a little support. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, he's been listening to me about recording and listening for a while, so he could probably knew where I was headed, but I was like, you have that app on your phone, right? And so he made a recording about giving himself permission to go learn about meditation and some reasons, why he really wanted to do it. And then he's like, well, what do I do with this? And I said, well, just listen to it every day until you go.
Uh-huh.
And he did.
Uh-huh.
And it took him about a week and a half. And so I just got the report this last time. And I was kind of surprised, just because the resistance is usually...
Yeah.
So that was cool, but he did it, and he loves it. He's hearing these Dharma talks. And then he comes back and he reads Suffering is Optional, and it actually helps him translate what he's hearing at the Dharma talks there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But so the next step is, getting that. So he just sees that as like a really cool thing that helped him go do what he wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then that next step is seeing, well, that's the process to doing anything you want to do.
Yes.
Yeah.
You'll spring that on him next time. Yeah, because otherwise, we know tons of people who are there. Oh, that was really great. But never occurred to them to apply it to anything else. Because
mm-hmm.
there's that resistance.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to help me maybe with a little bit of the background on this. But we had a conversation, the monks and you, the other day, talking about how, all of us have the capacity, the ability to get on the cushion and completely drop the conversation and be here for whatever's here and not take anything personally, not... I think the example is, if we're on the cushion, and something comes in, we don't go, wait, can you hold on? Something's really upsetting right now. I'll get to you in a moment.
I just had a memory of something my mother said to me. I really need to deal with this.
Yeah.
I'll be right back.
Just, sit on your cushion for a while.
Right.
We would never do that. But we go around, it seems, at least in my experience, go around all day doing that. Hold on, life. I've got to go indulge this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know I'm eating now, but I really need to think about this.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'm taking care of something that affects the whole community, but let me talk to the...
Mm-hmm.
And, essentially, it's always about me.
Which is one aspect of all about me, right? And another fun one is I could get in trouble.
Yeah.
What if I make a mistake? If I could take one word out of the English language, I swear to God, it would be a mistake. I mean, there'd be a lot of rivals for that one word. But good Lord, number of grown people who walk around terrified that I could get in trouble.
Yeah. So that's actually the one I've been watching, essentially. I mean, it's a lot of it is a big karma of mine. It's like, how do I look? So always maintaining the image. And everything, it seems like, runs through that. So it could be, ooh, that wasn't so, how do I cover that up so that well, they probably won't, you know, it's a conversation about it. And how do I...
Maybe they won't notice that I rent the car. Yeah. I'll just bring the groceries in.
And then the next person goes to the car, I'll be like, I don't know what happened.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. You know, we laugh.
Oh, yeah.
But Jen can attest, having been here for quite a while, that that's that far field.
Yeah.
So, folks, there's a mirror missing from the side of the car. Did anybody notice that? So all of you have been driving that car. Nobody know.
Yeah. Or, you know, like, are they mad at me? Or just all that kind of, all that stuff. And it's, and I've been watching it. It's like, it's on its own program.
Yes.
You know, like,
yes,
I was not wanted to do that. So we were talking about applying something great that we've used over the years but haven't talked as much about, which is a change in behavior leads to a change in consciousness. Mm-hmm. Even if, like, this is so cool. So anyway, we had talked about that. And in the meantime, I have this little other side project of cleaning old stuff out of my computer. And there was this file that I made when I was in coaching about essentially notes on every coach call. And I was surprised. I didn't know what it was at first. I clicked in, and then I was like, well, what's in here? And I clicked on the document, and it was the focus for the package was a change in consciousness, or a change in behavior leads to a change of consciousness. And the commitment was, at the time, I was constantly going to a conversation about the relationship I was in. So it was essentially every time that happened, I would say this mantra about life unfolding and what is life offering me right now? What's life offering right now? So I've been using that similar mantra every time I hear the, you know, oh, but what are they going to do, you know, or not? And what I'm seeing about it is every time I ask, what is life offering right now, it's some form of love. And which I think, of course, is what all that stuff about looking good and keeping up the image is all designed to cover up. Because at first when we had the assignment, I was kind of like, well, I don't know how to not make it about me. And I was like, that's it.
Oh dear, I'm making it about me.
Yeah, I mean, you can't do that inside the conversation. So you have to get out of the conversation. So how can I practice getting out of the conversation? Well, every time I'll just pick up something particular so I can focus, you know, this image thing, I'm going to do this mantra to exit the conversation. Mm-hmm. And it's just...
To get back here.
To get back here,
yeah.
Which is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, it's just, I've only been doing it for a day and a half, but it's...
Well, it's really good because you can't, as you're pointing out, we can't not make it about me. That's just not possible.
Right.
So, but we can drop the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big one that people stumble over. Yeah. Whatever variation on that people are stumbling over.
Yeah.
But it's, okay, I've identified this problem, and so now I need to address that. Mm-hmm. Well, then, again, that just becomes the next layer of the good. Okay.
Yeah.
You deal with that. You fix that. That would be great.
Yeah. And just seeing how it always is kind of headedness in the opposite direction. So, you know, the whole keeping up the image is supposedly so I'll continue to belong and be accepted, and essentially so I'll be loved, as I was just reminded in another meeting I had today. And, well, first of all, that's never going to be there. Ever. It doesn't matter how, quote, good the image is. It's always dissatisfying, and it's always a train wreck to, you know, you're a loser, or you failed, or whatever.
Yes. Well, that's the internal thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you looking good is really not a big help to me.
No.
So, I've been on this kick, I guess, because, you know, we've just been through the, for those of you who aren't in the email class, the 1, 2, 3, right?
Yeah.
And so... you know, I want to be right. You know, I want to be right. That, because that's the right, good person. Well, actually, I want to be perfect. Okay, I want to be right all the time. Okay, because that's the right person thing to be. But is that really what's going on? No. I mean, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wanted to really know it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so there's nothing good person about it.
No.
In the same way with that image, you know.
Yeah.
I need everybody to think that I'm, what we could say, the perfect person, right? Because if you're going to have a good self-image, that would be the one to have, right? Be the perfect person. And where does that leave all the slobs? Right? And is that, are we going to go, oh, thank God, at least there's one perfect person. Well, thank God we have Scott. He always looks good.
It's always a process of separation.
Yes.
So if I'm going to be right, then you have to be wrong. And if I look good, you got to look bad.
That's right. And the con that it's coming from any kind of a humble place in me where I'm just trying to be loved. Well, as you say, that's not going to lead to love. Putting other people down just doesn't tend to make them love us. But it's, I mean, the con is pretty universal, I think. Isn't it? Why would everybody think I'm good? It's not going to make them feel good.
No. And it's a complete waste of this life.
Yeah.
It's exhausting. And
yeah. And the other thing is, of course, it assumes you're not loved. Yeah. That, I mean, that's the really deadly part of it, right? Mm-hmm. So I have to do all this stuff to be loved. How do you know you're not loved? Well, because I have this voice telling me that I have to do all this stuff so I'll be loved. So it just figures that I'm not loved, or I wouldn't have to do all this stuff to be loved. All those things that we just never get to go back and question.
Like, wait, let's check out the original premise here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, then when I do get out of the conversation, here comes all the love. I get to receive the love. I get to experience myself as love.
Yeah.
There it all is.
Yes.
In an instant.
In an instant. Yeah. Because the only thing blocking us is that conversation.
So, it's right there. Mm-hmm. So, thank you.
Mm-hmm. It's great. It'll just go right down there. It'll just come right around.
I had one of those expansive experiences this last week, and that was one of the main teachings in it. I had this incredible experience, and I wasn't being the right person. It was just like, it was so incredible.
Even though they were going, curses, that wasn't supposed to happen.
It was like, oh my God, it's true. All that stuff is so unnecessary. It's so unnecessary to, you know, this words of Mary Oliver, you know, crawl on your knees across, you know, in the words of Sherry Hoover, there's nothing wrong with you, you know, it's just like, I just saw, it had, being good and being in love, they have nothing, absolutely nothing to do with each other.
However, where they do mix, it seems to me, is when you realize how loved you are, it does make you want to be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But not in a good way,
not
better than anybody else.
Right.
You just want to be the best person you can be.
Yeah. Exactly.
For everybody.
Exactly. It wasn't the kind of good I was referring to as the one I know so well, that I didn't want to make a mistake good.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I just saw that good is just totally irrelevant. Totally irrelevant.
Well, and again, it's completely egocentric. Mm-hmm. That's the to me the key thing that we have to get on. It is completely egocentric.
Yeah.
And when we get that, you know, all of ego's arguments for being that way start to come apart. Because if I'm not doing it for this higher purpose, then if it's just egocentric, well, I'm going to be egocentric. I was trying to do all this stuff because I thought that would keep me from being egocentric. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the difference in life experience is like, what, you know, it's just vast.
Yet nothing has changed.
And yet nothing has changed. Boy, I felt like just having had that experience, like, I'm still the same.
Still the same.
I'm still the same.
Screw up people.
Screwed up person. Everything is still, not going perfectly. And yet, I had that experience, like, wow, but everything's different. It's okay, It's
totally. Because the thing is, everything in you is trying to be the best person you can be. Mm-hmm. Again, not so that you're going to be better than everybody else, but you just want to be a good person.
Yeah.
You don't.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And so, good. That's all that's going on. And then sometimes we forget to do things, and sometimes we say the wrong thing, and sometimes we, whatever it is that fallible human beings do, as an opportunity to get to choose unconditional love.
Yes.
So you get to see the goodness that's always been there under all this ego nonsense.
Yeah. Truly, that whole experience of there never was anything wrong, just, there's just always been this incredible goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I took away from it is that, we're talking about practicing presence, and just to see. I feel like this experience opened up to me because it was in the presence of someone that was really present.
Really?
Present.
Was present or was it?
Was present.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I feel that's what I could have that. I had that opening up. Mm-hmm. Just being with that person. Mm-hmm. And so just seeing the gift of presence.
Is there somebody more present than we are? It's not hard to imagine.
Well, and that brings me to another thing. Mm-hmm. I've had that in guidance as well. We're just, it's one of those, what I think is really interesting, it's that place beyond words. Like, I've had that in guidance where, I would sit and talk about something, and then I get up and leave, and I realize I just got something, but it was had nothing to do with the conversation that went on. And I feel that same thing of being totally changed, but what was that? What was that? And so it's that sort of, yes. Yeah. There's nobody more. There's nobody more present than us.
I knew that. Yeah. I knew what you meant.
But so it was that, that nonverbal communication.
Well, and it's one of those too where it's back to kind of the body and mind are one, where something happens, as you say, there's a transformation.
Yeah.
But if somebody said, well, what was that? What?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's the experience. That's the experience, too. It's like, I've had some pretty, technicolor experiences, and at the time I thought, wow, But this, it's just, something shifts, but it's so much more subtle, and even takes it. Well, the head is trying, the head doesn't get it.
Mm-mm.
It's happened on a different level, and so my experience is that I could go along for a while and not at all gork or get what just happened because.
Which argues for staying present, doesn't it? Yeah, don't try to figure it out. Uh-huh. Don't think about it. Don't wonder about it. Don't anything. Just smile.
Uh-huh.
Maybe a little thank you.
Yeah.
And just...
Uh-huh. What I found was interesting, and I listened to my recordings around this time, is just prior to this experience, I had a conversation with a mentor, and the mentor had said to me, just had pointed at the possibility of what happened
shortly
before.
Oh, before.
Before the experience.
The mentor pointed at this before the... Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then the recordings after, and they're like, no, no, no. She wasn't quite getting it, you know. But she eventually got up to speed. But it's kind of fun to listen to, like, that's interesting.
Well, it's fun to have that kind of distance on the human being who gets bamboozled, we could say, you know, or isn't quite up to speed. So there you are listening to that. You're listening from that other place to an experience of that other place, and you can see that she just not quite yet. She's close.
She's close.
And to have that kind of distance on the person we think of as myself. And to realize that that's going on all the time. It's going on with us all the time. All the time. Mm-hmm. We're having experiences that we don't really know we're having, that we don't understand, that are happening on different layers and levels, and things are kind of moving around and coming together. Going along and all happens, and then there's one of those those moments, and then...
It was definitely, she was going through a particular filter in it.
Mm-hmm. Just took a while for the filter to...
Well, and you could see the filter. She couldn't see it, but you could, which is the mountain in the pulling that filter out of the way.
So, wow, that's the beauty of recording and listening, really. Oh. I mean, to have that chronicled and to see, wow, that whole thing unfold, it's pretty amazing. I would have never... I couldn't have told. I mean, if you did, I wouldn't have told you that that was her experience.
You wouldn't have known any of that.
I was all glossed over. I was sure that from the get go she got it, and that she was just, very interesting.
So I have a little question for guidance, but then the main thing is I wanted to kind of give an update on life. The main thing is that I wanted to sort of give an update on my process, whatever my awareness process is. But the first smaller thing is, so I'm here at the monastery and I'm trying to practice awareness. And
trying to practice what?
Awareness.
Oh, that's very good.
And I'm not journaling other than to do the 30-day exercises, and there's a lot of yakety yak, but occasionally an idea will come from nowhere that feels very creative, that wasn't even necessarily something I was thinking about. It'll just kind of drop in. It is pure content, like it's related to my job back, you know, in a faraway land, and I wasn't going for it, but it came up, and I'm like, ooh, I like that. And I want to remember it. And I'm wondering what the guidance is around that. Do I just hope that it sticks, and then when I go back, it's there? Should I record it? Is it permissible to jot it down? What is the guidance on that?
Well, you could certainly record it, right? Because recording, that's fair game. We could record everything.
Okay.
But the encouragement that I would offer you is to trust that when that is relevant, it will be there. And you can actually ask it to be there. And you can train yourself to be open to it being there at the right time.
Okay.
So people, something I was reading, would encourage people to have a notebook and pen next to them when they sit to jot down all the... No, that's probably not a really good idea. But one of the things that many people realize is that as we practice awareness, there is more of what is sometimes termed creativity. So there's a greater opening to possibilities than were there previously. And we do have to kind of... negotiate our relationship with that. Because, first of all, you can't do everything that is suggested, and it's probably not all for you to do anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so to learn to just notice what's there and know that what is for you will stick around.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And then so overall, I have been looking at a process that on its most severe side makes me feel as though everything must be survived, right? And the sort of like a tightness of every experience that is, you know, on a schedule or in life, you know, and that until those things are done and, you know, we've safe made it to the bed, right? Right, like, you know, like, then they're, right? And there's like this, you know, so that's in its most extreme form. But in a lesser form, it is just sort of a desire to do stuff, right? So sort of like, I have a task, and I know I need to do that task. Tension builds until I begin that task. Then when I do the task, I'm very intense and I'm very focused, and that part I enjoy, but kind of to the exclusion of everything else. And then that thing is over and I feel a certain relief, and then the same thing, so on and so forth, is sort of the lighter version of that, that, you know, now that I've got the hang of things here, right, okay, moving into that version of it, and that feels to me very familiar to how I live my life at home. Like, that is just a very deep and familiar practice, or process, rather. And So I had the realization, though, that I really enjoy being intensely focused, and I feel like it is a gift to be able to do that, and that is all fine. But I suspect, that there's, you know, something about this arc, right, which leads to a lot of just general intensity and tightness in life. And while I'm enjoying being focused on a task, I wouldn't necessarily describe it as joyous. Not that everything has to be joyous.
Mm-hmm.
But there isn't a playfulness or a lightness about things often.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm working with, and that's about as far as I've gotten.
Well,
yeah.
That seems like a lot. So that surviving is not an uncommon experience at all. This is true. I mean, almost everybody I ever talk to has that. You know, get up in the morning, look at the day, okay, and then start it, right? And just get that behind me, and when I get through that, but never stopping to really to think about what we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm just trying to get through life, because
mm-hmm.
almost everybody, when they finally achieve that, is not as happy about it. It's not like, you know, time to go to bed. So one of the things that might be helpful
mm-hmm.
is to use that ability to focus,
mm-hmm.
paying attention to attention, or we could say aware of attention,
mm-hmm.
aware of attention on whatever it is that you're doing,
mm-hmm.
and then to practice letting the awareness expand.
Mm-hmm.
Because it sounds like,
yeah.
right, and
mm-hmm.
all the tense muscles that go
mm-hmm.
with that, whereas to relax the awareness and let
mm-hmm.
it expand, but still training yourself to be present with what you're doing can be a marvelous experience
mm-hmm.
of now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you really are, it's not that you're surviving the moment,
mm-hmm.
you're actually in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You're aware
mm-hmm.
that you're in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that that's where the enjoyment's going to come in. Yeah? Because there's an awareness
mm-hmm.
that, not that the language is not good, but it's like this. Now I'm Mm-hmm. You know, now I'm peeling the carrot. Mm-hmm. Now I'm washing the cup. Mm-hmm. And so there's a feeling of, awareness of, mm-hmm. of you participate being in life, being lived. Mm-hmm. And so less of that separate, even though the language sounds like it would be separate, mm-hmm. the separate feeling of it can fall away. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Come up this way, Rebecca.
That was really helpful. It pointed to something very similar in the process that I would love to bring out. So a few weeks ago, we mentioned when we were in passing this large puppy energy. Do you remember that?
No, I remember nothing.
Sorry. I should have.
If you bring it up again, it might come back.
Well, I was feeling rather kind of blah that night, and you know, and you said, there's happy over there. So anyway, and I just mentioned that I usually have this, what you kind of dubbed large puppy, you know, maybe it's energy. Anyway, it's sort of this kind of, energy that I can sometimes feel like I need to rein in, or I should rein in. So where I've noticed it pretty regularly is in meal cleanup. I will get to a place when we're just kind of getting underway, especially right after the table has been rolled in, where it's like, I want to do every job. I want to do everyone, every job.
I bet you could get started. You might want to help her out with that.
Well, but what that energy tends to do is kind of make me run over people, you know? Same, not literally, but energetically, you know? And so what I've been practicing with is sort of what you were just talking about with, okay, I'm aware of that energy, and I'll just sort of breathe into it and let awareness expand, and I'll just sort of, what I would call, just relax. Everyone's here, everyone's participating. I move from kind of being the partner that's leading the dance to just dancing.
Now it's a country dancing. Nobody has to push anybody else around.
Like a line dance. Yeah. and what I just saw, a connection I just saw in that previous conversation, was that the difference feels like a karmic. What's behind that, I want to do everything, is I need to belong. I need to be included in this. So I'm doing everything. Whereas a realization, or maybe it was two or three conversations ago, anyway, a realization that, oh, it was Scott. Let's question the premise here. Because what is even belong? We're all here doing this dance, this technique.
Well, it does kind of have that, it's a little suspicious, isn't it? I'm going to push everybody out of the way so I belong.
Yeah. Exactly.
Everybody's gone.
I'm going to clean the cleanup, you know, yeah. Or something. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, exactly. It is.
Sorry, Jen.
Wait till Rachel just swallows before you make a joke. Yeah. So anyway, and I've just been seeing little flavors of that mm-hmm. belonging karma all over the place.
Yes. Well, and maybe an interesting place to look is, so there's all that energy, and the assumption when we have a lot of energy is that we have to do something with it, mm-hmm. which we technically don't have to do. And we can actually just allow it to be there. Mm-hmm. Which is that place that we talk about of the container has to expand, mm-hmm. right? So there just has to be larger awareness to contain all that energy. But it doesn't have to turn into doing something.
Oh, whoa. Mm-hmm. That's radical, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
Well, not for me, it's not, but it sounds like to whoever's listening right now.
Yeah,
now, I didn't mean it to be, you know, revolutionary.
Yeah, but it is to karma.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because apparently, when there's all that energy, then it needs to be acted out in some way. Now, so how do we rationalize that? How do we explain that? Well, let's make it about belonging. Uh-huh. Is it about belonging? No. But belonging, lots of energy, put those two together.
Yeah.
Never look at the fact that they don't go together.
Yeah.
And then, there. And the, you know, the icing on the cake is that you then have to feel bad about it.
Yes.
So a lot of energy is not a good thing. Belonging is a problem.
And you're going to have a whole long list of things you do wrong just for the icing.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas when you we do what you're doing, which is pulling those things apart and seeing that they don't actually have anything to do with one another, and we don't need to assume that what we've been conditioned to think about them is true.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, it's that pulling them apart, and then there's nothing to... In the pulling them apart, that's all that's needed. Because then it's apparent that there's nothing to fix.
That's right.
Wow, and something else that just dropped in when you said earlier the mind and body are one. I just had this sort of assessment, physical assessment, that what I'm experiencing physically is like a big tangle. You know, and it takes a while for the body, for the symptoms to sort of sort themselves out. And you just laid out on an energetic level that exact same thing.
The tangle.
Yes, and that all we're doing is sorting. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that is really cool. But that just, yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Jill.
Okay. So, I just got here more or less. An ego already is thinking about being somewhere else.
Ego realizes this is a big mistake.
No, not like that, actually. That would maybe be too obvious. Also, I'm seeing resistance not in places where I expected it to see it, like, because it would be too obvious to, like, any work task or the shoe thing or whatever. But more like just to kind of to presence itself, like mindful eating, or no, I'd just rather be in fantasy here, like kind of like that, for example. And with the being somewhere else, it like just drops in like scenes or memories of other places, like, wouldn't it be nice to be there now? And I'm like, and or it wants things that it can't have here.
How about an iced latte? Maybe they serve those.
Just things like that. And I guess it comes actually in with those, actually in moments of presence when it's like kind of like oh, the trees are so nice, beautiful. Like, wouldn't it be nice now to have a cigarette? And like, like things like that.
Yes.
To like take me out of that moment, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that is a lot easier to see here when everything else is quiet. Then it's like all everything in there gets a little louder.
Mm-hmm. And more obvious.
Yeah, more.
Right.
Obvious.
So even I mean, it clearly it is careful about what you're going to catch on to.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got to do something. And that's the bad news for it.
Hmm.
Because here, it's really hard to distract somebody and not be noticed.
Hmm.
Because a lot going on, as you don't doubt.
Yeah.
And the most subtle things, you know, if you're in your other life, walking around, and there's a picture drops in of somewhere else to be, you know, it's just that kind of thing happens all the time. Mm-hmm. We don't think of it as a thing. We don't wonder why that now, or watch where I go after that. I mean, it's also fast. Mm-hmm. You're on to the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. But here, it's spacious. So those things start dropping in, and it's kind of like they drop in. And then by the time they get here, you've seen it. Right? And then what happens next? It's like, isn't it? It's like everything's in slow motion. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's been actually by now kind of amusing to watch. What's still not so amusing is like kind of when I got here with the workshop, actually, it was actually great to have that workshop as a kickoff.
It's hysterical. Fly in, drive all the way up here, sleep for a couple of hours, get in the car, drive all the way back. Oh, plan this.
Yeah. Well, it was excellent as a kickoff. So that's not what we call it at work. So what kind of presented itself there as the theme for here, it seems, was kind of like the... I call it now the stress of trying to do it right and being the right person, and the fear of doing it wrong and being the wrong person on the flip side. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've certainly... Well, it's kind of one thing I get to see is as soon as I look to conditioned mind, that's what I gotta hear. I mean, mostly it's the wrong... on the wrong side.
Mm-hmm. Whether there's any truth to it or not, who can say?
Yeah.
But it's happy to point out a great long list.
And another very interesting thing to see was that it uses projection a lot. I mean, it's always like, oh, they think probably you did that wrong or something like that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I can't tell.
Nobody's saying. So, which is wonderful, isn't it? Because it's so clear, it's projection.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody's doing or saying anything that can be interpreted as anything. And yet,
Yeah, exactly. That kind of brought me to see that why that stick of, oh, what will they think, and or what do they think, why that is such a powerful stick to beat or push around someone with, was that basically it's that they're looking for approval or looking for love that somewhere deep inside is, and that it kind of uses to... Well, yeah, basically to stress me out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's that deep desire for love and approval, and the constant message is you did it wrong. Mm. And doing it wrong, just generally speaking, doesn't get either love or approval. So it creates this marvelous gap of suffering. And, of course, the power of seeing how constant that message is, because... if it's not constant, then we do things like look at the trees and realize how beautiful they are, and there's a feeling of love and acceptance. And yeah, but I'm sure you did something wrong.
Yeah.
How about a cigarette? Mm-hmm. Well, that's wrong. You're in a monastery. You didn't bring any, did you? I knew you didn't, or I wouldn't have asked that question. Thank you. Yeah.
so appreciate Sangha. Just, it's amazing, truly, actually. No matter what's going on with me, I'm able to relate to everything everyone says all the time, which is so helpful. Mm-hmm. And I've also been in the, I think probably that topic of not indulging ego, not indulging the conversation, is the thing that's the most deeply inspiring to me. And I would not have had that language for it, but it's definitely what brought me to practice. It's definitely what brought me to practice. Mm-hmm. And actually, I had a really interesting synchronicity happen last night. I had these cassette tapes.
Wow.
Yeah. And they are...
Are you just going to frame them, or do you have a player?
I knew. It was one of those where you have a recorder for the longest time, what are you going to do with that? And then you... When you decide you need it, you can't find it. You know that thing?
Yeah, oh yeah, do I? Yeah.
So anyway, I found it. So these are recordings from when I was first at the monastery, before we were actually doing official recording and listening, but we had cassette tapes because we had the assurances, right? And I'm talking into it and saying, you know, this is really keeping me conscious. I don't know what it is about it, but something about talking into the recorder is really being helpful. So I'm going to need to write a note to the guest master to get some more tapes. And I have a series of about 12 tapes that I called Zen Ramblings. And I would just talk to myself. And the one that I put in last night was from September 11, 2001.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And all I knew was that note that had been posted on the board. And I was saying into the recorder, I'm positive this is all everyone's doing in the world, but I have no idea what's going on. No idea. And what I was talking about...
What did the note say?
I can almost tell you verbatim. Because it said, I said it on the recorder, that a national tragedy has occurred. A plane flew into the Pentagon, into the... World Trade Center. One crashed in a field in Pennsylvania and one is still missing. Thousands of people have lost their lives. The guide wanted you to have this information so that you wouldn't find out from a casual passerby.
That's right, because I was at Malaprop's
yes.
bookstore
That's
in
right.
North Carolina.
North Carolina.
Flown into Asheville as that was all happening.
Yes, that's right. And drove home because there were no flights. Drove cross country. And I got it that night. I can remember it. And then there it was on this recording. That feeling, that experience of whatever you want to call it, rage or grief or whatever, and how intense that is, and I can't stand it, and how I absolutely could see how then I'm going to do this with it, and then it's going to come back at me, and then I'm going to do this with it, and it's going to come back at me. And that truly is what brought me to practice, is the realization that I had no, that I knew that that was inside here, and I had no ability to influence it. Even though in the deepest place in me, I wanted to be a presence for not first dropping it, but I knew I couldn't. And what I've been watching, so we had that conversation, and those conversations are incredibly important and inspiring for me, because I get reconnected again with, that's what I want, that's what I want. And what I watch...
To be able to drop...
To drop
all
it,
of that.
To
and
drop
not
it.
Go to those places of...
Exactly.
Hatred
to push it back out. To,
I can't stand it and no.
On the tiniest levels. The tiniest levels. Mm-hmm. And what I watch with such tremendous humility and as much compassion and love as I can muster is how unbelievably challenging that is. It's so challenging to do. And what it comes down to, it feels like what's going on for me in practice right now is I realize every conversation is death. Every conversation is whatever it is on any micro level. Oh, you know what? Maybe it's going to be so fun. And, you know, then there's going to, it's all going to that same evil place. And with that realization, the choke collar that it puts, at least for me, on the human, is so intense. Because it's like, it cannot give you an inch. Because all experiences of being outside of that are immediately unbelievable. And so that just...
It helped me on that.
Yeah.
Every experience of being outside of
the
that,
conversation. Outside the conversation.
Uh-huh.
So it's like...
Takes you where you want to be.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
So it can't let you out of its sight mm-hmm. for 1 second. Mm-hmm. It cannot stop talking to you for 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
And then that place where you were... Oh, the second layer, right? The, you know, I'm thinking about being at home, and then, oh, I shouldn't be thinking about being at home, you know, and that, I mean, just a layer upon layer upon layer. So I just, yeah, just practicing so much patience and kindness, and I guess, I mean, as I say it, gratitude for that there is such a desire to have that be, have that be life experience. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the only one I would add to your list yeah. is some humor.
Mm, yeah.
Because otherwise it can get mighty grim in that arm wrestling match with...
And you know what? That has definitely been missing in the last, like, 48 hours, I would say. And it's one of my saving graces in practice is humor. Humor with Sadie, with the mentor, with the human, just that place of, like, uncle, you know, so thank you for throwing that back in there because... It's so important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Humor and patience.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so it was just amazing that recording came up, you know,
yeah.
last night. Yeah.
It's a long time ago, huh?
Long time ago. Oh, and you know, there's one other tiny piece I just remembered about it too, is that I realized as I was recording just the other night that as I'm talking, the voice is also talking to me. And then when I listen back to it, all I hear is what the human is saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that's one of the brilliant things about recording and listening, mm-hmm. is that the voice...
The voice in the head can't ever get on there unless you let it.
It doesn't have a voice.
Uh-huh.
So that's what recording actually does, is it teases apart those two things. Whereas when I'm going around, those two things are the same thing. I'm talking, and meanwhile, it's talking to me, and you're not going to like listening back to this recording, and da, 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 da. And when I listen to the recording, all I have an experience of is that, not this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's such a brilliant way to
speak. It is,
off.
And it is an argument for being listening to recordings as much as humanly possible.
Yeah, for sure.
It really is. Not that we want to stay in that place forever.
Yeah.
But until it tips over,
yeah.
until that's not the case, until if you're not talking,
mm-hmm. exactly.
there's quiet.
Exactly.
Until that day,
mm-hmm.
you want to make sure that you're listening to what you want to be listening to.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as you say, otherwise, it's you're listening to that. Yeah. Whether it's you're conscious that you're listening to that,
exactly.
whether your attention is on that
yeah.
or not.
Yeah.
That's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.